So yesterday we had I was away, I was off site, and I got a call saying we have a leak in one of the hermitages, a leak in Hermitage 3. So I contacted the plumber and I contacted the gardener and so on and so forth to try and get this thing sorted. And then lo and behold, anyway, we realised that it's not exactly a new leak. This is the leak that we've always had. It's a grand leak. It's a fine leak. It's okay. Like it's a couple of drops. It's not. It's nothing. It's, I was thinking, like gushing water kind of a thing. No, it's, oh, so we knew about that leak. It's the usual leak. It's not. It's always, yeah, the familiar one. That one that's been leaking for ages. So it was nothing new. No big drama. But it got me thinking today now about those kind of situations in our lives where there might be certain things that need to be repaired that we've come to accept. I mean, we all have them in our houses. Everyone has the creaking door, or you know, the particular door that has a broken handle, but everyone knows, I mean, it's been broken for years, like it's fine. Or the window doesn't close properly, or what's that? It's a Wonderful Life, you know, the knobby thing on the end of the banister, you know, when he, you know, every time he goes up the banister, like the thing comes off in his hand. And you just get used to it. You get used to these having these broken things around the place. In the spiritual life, though, it is definitely disadvantageous to accept some of these broken things, to see that there are parts in our lives that need to be changed or should be changed, but we're just used to them. We've become accustomed to them. And so maybe the fight might be gone out of us, or maybe even the desire to grow, change, or heal might be gone out of us. We might have it's good to accept things that we cannot change. We have to. There are certain things in our lives, yes, that we must accept. Do you know what I mean? You are who you are. That's necessary to accept. If certain people have passed away, that's necessary to accept. The fact that you're 5'2" and not 6'4" is something you're going to have to accept, because that ain't changing. It's only going to go. You know, once you're over 18, like that. Okay, give up hope. Just move on. Accept it. Okay, things ain't going to change. There are certain things in our lives that we have to accept, but there are other things that we should not accept. You know, things as regards, you know, our striving for virtue, our overcoming of vice. This is something that these things can change. Now, your temperament isn't going to change. I mean, you're not going to be changed from being predominantly choleric to suddenly phlegmatic and not really kind of caring. That's not going to happen, but one can learn to use your temperament or whatever approach to life you have, whatever life view you have. You can whatever temperament you have, you can use that for good. But just this idea that we have certain weaknesses, and yeah, sure, that's just the way it is. These aren't the kind of things we should accept. So Lent again is a great time for re-evaluating where we are in that fight, where we are in that battle. Are there certain aspects of our lives, our personalities, are there maybe even certain sins that we've grown accustomed to and therefore have just accepted and don't really see the need anymore to work on them or to repair them with God's grace, because actually that they've been there since the beginning. An alternative gospel for today actually is the gospel of the man born blind. The man born blind. So if you're born blind, in a way, you know that you're missing something, but you don't quite know what you're missing. You know that everyone else can see, and everyone else can, you know, plant potatoes and pick olives and, you know, make furniture. You know, the other people are doing these things. That said, you don't even know what any of these things look like. You know, what color is an olive? What is a color? Oh, there's a blind priest in our community. And he went blind at the age of about 8 or 9. He got river blindness. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the ads on TV. If people drink water that isn't purified, there can be these little worms, basically, in the water, which when you drink it, then it goes into your... They survive your stomach, and they go into your bloodstream anyway. And they basically eat the retina out of your eye, so you can't see, and it's irreparable because you now have no retina. There's no retina there. So no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to fix that. simple solution is boil your water, but yeah, it's not that easy in third world countries. Anyway, so he's blind, and I it was very interesting having conversations with him, because I asked him, do you have any idea what I look like? I said, I don't mean to be facetious, like, but do you know what I look like? And he said, I can tell that you're about my height. And I said, yeah. And then he just said, come here. So he just went, he said, oh, a nose. I said, yes. And so he had a better idea after, you know, just long hair, short hair. You know, it was very interesting. And then I asked him, I said, do you remember what red looks like? Do you remember what the color of red? He says, not really. Imagine forgetting what red looks like. He hadn't seen it. He hasn't seen it in 30 years. 40 years now. 50 years, actually. It's 50 years now. He just can't remember what red looks like. So in a way, he doesn't know what he's missing, in a way. But he does remember certain things. He remembers running around playing football with the lads when he was a child. But if you're born blind, then there are a lot of things that you've never seen, a lot of things you've never done, a lot of things you're just accustomed to not being aware of. You don't know what you're missing. But you know something's wrong. And this can be in our battle with sin, where we know we're accustomed to certain weaknesses or certain traits that aren't good for us, but maybe we've accepted just being there, accepted that this is a weakness I have in the story. This is not what the Lord asks of us. In our battle in overcoming all of our weaknesses and overcoming our sin, an essential point which is so easy to forget, something I have to constantly remind myself of as well, is that we were never meant to do this alone. We were never meant to fight this battle alone. We were never meant just to kind of overcome these sins alone. We watched the Shack there recently. A lot of people had allergies at the end of the movie for some reason, just lots of runny noses and that. But I think it's a very good movie. I think it's very. We must talk about it at some point as well. Have a kind of group session on it. It is very interesting. But there's a scene. There are many inspirational scenes there, but there's one particular scene where. The man, Mac is his name, he's in a boat out in a lake, and there's a lot of symbolism going on here which I can't go into, but as he's rowing, the boat starts to sink and the water becomes a kind of a tarry, oily, black substance. And he calls out and he says to Jesus, Jesus, why are you doing this to me? And Jesus says, I'm not. This is you. You're drowning in your own negativity. And then Jesus calls out to him, step out of the boat. Step out, look at me. Stop looking at the problem, look at me. Look at me. And then he looks up, he looks at Jesus, and things start to calm, and then Jesus asks him to step out of the boat. And he says, this isn't going to work, like, I can't walk on water. And he said, you were never meant to do this alone. You were never meant to do this alone. Come. And then he's able to walk on water. Okay, another scene happens, and then he wants to go back to the boat. So Mac starts to walk out in the water on his own and goes up kind of knee-deep in the water and says, hey, this worked a minute ago. Well, this worked an hour ago. What's the story now? And he said, you're not meant to do this alone. So then again, Jesus comes out from the water with him, and out they go, running across the lake. The point is, though, it's just a simple point that they make on a couple of occasions. Like, in fact, throughout the whole movie, that we were never meant to do this alone. Our striving for virtue, our striving to be saints, we were never meant to do alone. And I think we, as adults, we can't hear that often enough. Because we're so prone to thinking, if I just pray more rosaries, if I just do more adoration, if I just, you know, if I, and all these things are good. But fundamentally, maybe the idea is that if I work hard enough, I can be a saint. That's a heresy, sorry, but it's called Pelagianism. You know, like, it's just a heresy. Like, that basically, if I work hard enough, I can sanctify myself. That's never the way the Lord intended it, never. And that's why it's humility is Our Lady's greatest attribute, Our Lady's greatest virtue, her humility. She's not conceived without sin and therefore says, well, actually, guys, I mean, ye poor sinners, ye poor things, you're battling away. Best of luck with it. Do you know? But she says, my soul glorifies the Lord, for the Almighty has done great things for me. The Almighty has done great things for me. Humility. So Lord, in our battles, in our struggles, we ask for that humility to call on you over and over and over again, and to never tire of needing you. If we're going to succeed, and we can, we will only succeed united with you. This is the way you have created us. This is how you want us to live in heaven, drawing from you. So Lord, let us rely on you in these last weeks of Lent, as hopefully our lives are becoming less distracted and more focused on you. We invite you into those areas of our lives that need healing, that need conversion, so turning back to you. Those areas that need bandaging. Those areas, Lord, that we are incapable on our own of repairing. We invite you in, Lord, and that you may say to us, pick up your mat and walk.